Hey, this is Ed. So this is a podcast, is that right?
This is.
Okay. We're officially podcasting right now. That's awesome.
This
is Straight from the Cutter's Mouth.
Welcome to Straight from the Cutter's Mouth, a retina podcast. At least once a week, we bring you insights and perspectives from the world of vitreoretinal surgery. I'm your host, Dr. Jay Schreather. Today on episode 117, I'm joined by Dr. James Vander of Wills Eye Hospital and Mid-Atlantic Retina in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. He answers some of my questions about the impact of private equity on retinal practices and what this means for new attendings. As a separate shameless plug, I would like to invite anyone attending this year's American Society of Retinal Specialists annual meeting in Vancouver, Canada, to please try and attend our first ever social media and online content for ophthalmologists instructional course. Dr. Sunir Garg, Charles Wyckoff, David Almeida, Ajit Khuri, and I will be doing a 75-minute course on Friday, June 20th, starting at 1 p.m. For more details, feel free to contact me directly. It should be an informational but approachable and relaxed session, which we hope to continue in the years coming, so please try and swing by. We would love to see you. How's your summer going so far?
It is a beautiful day in Philadelphia. First one we've had all summer. doing all right.
Straight from the Cutter's Mouth is now happy to be joined by one of my mentors, Dr. James Vander. Dr. Vander is a partner and attending at Mid-Atlantic Retina, part of Wills Eye Hospital in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, where he serves also as the managing business partner for the practice. Dr. Vander, thanks for being on the program.
My pleasure.
So we're here today to discuss a topic that's extremely hot in terms of fellows and people looking for jobs discussing, and throughout all ophthalmology and retina, in particular for this episode we're going to discuss, is the idea of private equity and the idea of private equity acquiring ophthalmology practices and what it means for ophthalmologists and for ophthalmology trainees who may be looking for jobs. So first, some definitions. You know, for, let's say we have listeners who aren't as familiar. What is the term, and what are we referring to? So when people talk about private equity in ophthalmology, what is the history behind this, and what does it mean?
So clarification, private equity is not the same as venture capital. There's often confusion. A venture capital is seed money to get a business going. Private equity represents groups, sometimes small, sometimes very large partnerships, LLCs, corporate entities, that are seeking above market returns. And one of the ways they do that is by targeting an industry, a niche that they feel is undervalued, and pouring money into it, acquiring one or more entities, often using a gateway entity into a marketplace to acquire several similar entities, and then rolling them up into something with greater value that they can then turn around and sell.
So Reggie Sanders, you know, gave a good talk at the Academy about this issue. I remember one of the hot topics was, is there the history behind this, right? And so people have discussed, this is not necessarily a new phenomenon. This was something that happened earlier in the 90s, correct?
Yes. In our part of the country, I'm in the Mid-Atlantic region. Many years ago, a practice in Delaware was the entry practice into this, and it's now quite a few years ago. In fact, the private equity company that bought that practice has, you know, sold it to another practice. I don't remember the year, but it was quite some time ago. It has reignited as an area of interest in the last few years, though.
So right now, if I'm a ophthalmology residency graduate, let's talk about fellowship grads. I'm a retina fellowship grad, and I'm being valued for a practice. And in the process of the interview, it comes out that private equity may be acquiring my practice I'm thinking of joining. What are kind of the important questions for me to ask, both to the people I'm interviewing with and also when I'm reviewing a contract?
Well, if it was mentioned by the practice that you're looking at, that they are looking at private equity, that's a good sign because it means they're being honest. The bigger danger would be that you are looking at a practice that isn't forthcoming, doesn't mention it, and you discover after the fact when you're signed and you're on board that lo and behold, the practice is being bought out. The basic structure of these deals is to provide a sizable upfront cash infusion, and that cash goes to the current owners of the practice, in exchange, the private equity company has control over the practice and control over compensation for the physician employees going forward. So if you are an older, actively practicing doctor with a relatively short time frame, you could make some very good arguments that this is a great idea. But on the other end, as an incoming physician, I am not confident that there is any way a physician coming in can be optimistic that this is a good thing for them personally.
You know, you referenced the scenario where maybe the practice doesn't tell you, or maybe you've signed already and a year into your practice, the practice gets sold. Again, every contract is different. Every situation is different. But this is a question I've gotten a lot from fellows looking for jobs. I mean, how much protections are there really? So if you're signing as an associate under a standard contract, assuming you haven't started the buy-in portion, if you're buying into partnership as part of your contract, if you're still in the associate stage where you're an employee of the practice, you really don't have many protections under a standard contract, right, in terms of having either a say in whether the practice is sold or not, or protecting your role thereafter. I mean, what happens to, is it simply that your contract rolls over to the new ownership?
Well, you're absolutely correct. You don't have a say, and you don't really have protection. And to be truthful, as a new associate, you don't really have protection other than your confidence in the integrity of the doctors that you're joining. Mm-hmm. They may promise you that you'll become a partner, but most contracts will include some sort of employment period during which the practice can say, thank you very much, but we don't want you to be a partner. You can leave or possibly stay. The only thing I would strongly recommend is that new employees at least consider the protection of some sort of waiver to any restrictive covenant that may be in place. If the practice says to you, we have no intention of selling to private equity, and then 6 months later you're on board and they do, it would be very nice that your restrictive covenant preventing you from practicing down the street mm-hmm. goes away. And in some ways, this would be a test of their sincerity when they say they're not going to sell. Because if you are free to leave and compete directly with them, you ought to get that in writing up front. Mm-hmm. And if they're reluctant, if they say they're not going to sell, but they're reluctant to give you an out clause with your restrictive covenant, should they change their mind, then to me, that's a red flag.
That's a really good point. You know, you kind of referenced this when you were talking about the definition of private equity. From their standpoint, not from the ophthalmologist or medical, the doctor's standpoint, why are they so interested in ophthalmology in particular? Why is there this influx of money into ophthalmology now?
The general answer is unlocked potential. So where is that potential? Most ophthalmologists are working very hard, probably either don't want to or can't work harder. It's difficult in this day and age to negotiate higher compensation from payers, though that is a sales pitch. That is something people look for, the notion that a big company might be able to negotiate more effectively with major payers. That's often not true. They may say they can operate more efficiently by economies of scale, save money, cut the expense side of the ledger, and generate more profitability that way. And also ancillary services, surgery centers, optical, alternative diagnostics, alternative revenue streams are appealing to them, and if they're well managed, can generate more money. But in my opinion, a driving factor is maybe we can get people to work equally hard for us if we dangle some money up front. And that's where the new associate didn't get the new money up front, but they're still working hard.
So the final question is, what do you see in terms of, and this is, it's always hard to predict the future, but one of the things that, you know, Dr. Sanders and others have said, well, look, this is a cyclic kind of event. This happened in the 1990s. You know, there was then kind of interest kind of waned, and now it's back. This isn't necessarily something that's here to stay. And there's probably some regional differences to this, right? As you mentioned earlier, with Mid-Atlantic region versus here in the South or out West. I mean, what do you see going forward? Is this something that, you know, and you're someone who's intimately involved in the business operations of your practice, is this something that you view as just a normal market kind of cycle fluctuations? Or do you think this is a sign that, you know, the medicine ophthalmology we're practicing will fundamentally change because this is a true shift over time that will happen?
Great question. And I think it's most likely the former. I think that private equity frequently will chase the next hot dollar. They will extract what they can and realize that this is not a great source of long-term revenue. That's not their model anyway. In their mind, someone else will be left holding the bag, realize that this is not a long-term venture. And while there may be some consolidation that persists, I think a field like ophthalmology, which is an office-based field, will continue to have a strong collection of small, maybe not too many solo practitioners, but small partnerships, small groups. Yes, there will be bigger groups. There'll be roles for each of them in the market. And some networks affiliation will be persistent, but I don't believe that the private practice of medicine by a physician-owned practice is dead, certainly not in ophthalmology and not in retina. I think that the cycle will complete itself and we will see some familiarities to previous cycles.
So to summarize for fellows or people interested in jobs, you know, ask the right questions when you do your job interview, you know, read the contracts carefully. And if there are concerns, you know, maybe bring up, like you said, the protective covenant, maybe as a protection, just to get a sense of whether or not the practice is truly, you know, truly interested in being upfront and honest with you about the situation.
Absolutely.
Well, Dr. Vander, that was extremely helpful and enlightening in a very short period of time. And that should hopefully be helpful to everyone who has questions about this topic, because something we've heard a lot of in the last months to about a year now. It's been discussed. Any final pieces of advice? We're kind of moving into the next cycle of fellows who are going to be looking for jobs, and we've talked about contracts and general advice before, but anything else specific in regards to this issue? And again, the fellows are just like any of us in an unstable situation. Every small, quote unquote, small issue or transient issue seems like very permanent, and people have been very anxious about this. So any reassuring pieces of advice you'd like to give before we close?
Just ask questions. Be open, be forthright. If somebody says, we're not going to sell, ask them why not, and see what that response is. I think a candid, open dialogue is going to be best. There should be no secrets from the candidate, and your future employer should feel likewise. I think the future is bright.
Perfect. Well, Dr. Vander, thanks so much for joining us, and hopefully we'll have you back soon.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you, Jay.
Bye-bye.
As always, you can find this episode and all prior episodes on our website, retinapodcast.com. That's RETINAPodcast.com. All 117 episodes, including this one, can be found there sorted by category. You'll also find our blog, Equal Round Reactive, Lessons from Our Pupils. On the website, you can sign up for our mailing list to get updates on the most recent episodes. And at the bottom are links to subscribe in the iTunes Store as well as Google Play. You can also like our Facebook page or find us in the podcast section of the iTunes Store and Google Play. We're on Twitter at RetinaPodcast, and to contact us, click on the contact us link on our website or email us at retinapodcast@gmail.com. We really love getting feedback, both on things we can do better, things we are already doing well. We also appreciate anyone who subscribes via iTunes or Google Play to leave your positive comments in the form of a review. Many thanks to Dr. James Vander for joining me. Thanks to Louis Kai, Mike Menencasa, and Angela Chang for producing this great episode. Finally, thank you, listeners, for what you do on a daily basis, the patient care you provide, the articles you read and publish, and the conversations you inspire here. This is Jay Schreather, signing off.
Feeling.
This is straight from the cutter's mouth.